they asked me if this is something that I want to try out, is Chromevox Next. And I was a little bit excited about that. And I already had a Chromebook, so I went ahead and started playing around with Chromevox Next. And it is definitely an update, and it works really well. And it's at a point where I would say one of the best browsing experiences on the web right now. I really find that I'm very close to the developers, and so again, you know, I can submit feedback. I know that it's going to get actioned. I'm going to see results on that. As long as it's something that they're able to do, if I start asking for the moon, then maybe not. I think most Chromebooks that were released recently are going to meet the needs of most students. But we decided to put together a webinar and invite parents and students. The idea is to sort of tie in a lot of those resources together to let parents and students know that, you know, these are the things that are available to them. You have to be able to reach those people in those rural areas, and I think that they have their own challenges, and that's how we're doing that.
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Jeff Thompson. Today we'll be headed way up north to Duluth, Minnesota, to the Lighthouse Center for Vision Loss, where their mission statement says, fostering independent and vibrant lives for individuals with vision loss. And with us today, technology instructor, case manager, Nimer Jabber. How are you doing, Nimer?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Nimer, thank you very much for coming on to Blind Abilities, taking time out of your day. I know you got a transition webinar going on today where parents and students will be participating with a panel of professionals from around the state. So thank you very much for squeezing us in today.
Sure, it's good to be on, and hello to all the Blind Abilities crowd.
Well, thank you. Nimer, I remember we met at a career expo for transition age students, and one thing that stuck out was your passion for affordable technology off the shelf that's accessible. And I just heard that you are sporting the new LG Watch Sport. Can you tell us a little bit about that watch and your experience?
Sure. So the LG Watch is round watch, and it was put out by a combination of partnership with Google and LG. They actually have two versions out. One is called the Style and one is called the Sport. And they released it in combination with a big software update that ties it sort of well more together with Android and phones. And it allows the watch to install its own apps and allows it to do things like make phone calls. The Style is one watch, and it does not have a lot of the sensors and features that the Sport has. For example, you can't make phone calls directly from the watch, but the Sport does have that feature. It has GPS, it has the ability to make payments through NFC. So it has a lot of these other sensors. And the one thing it does have is a speaker. Therefore, they're able to design it so it has accessibility.
And that's TalkBack built right into it.
That's right.
I like built-in. So what's your experience with the LG Sport watch?
Well, I just got the watch, and right now I'm using it. I'll look at things like notifications. I'll send a message with the watch, be able to, you know, look at my messages. I'll take an occasional call with the watch. I still tend to take calls with my phone, but, you know, I'll take occasional calls with the watch. I'll use it sort of to do music controls. I had hopes for using it for navigation, although when I opened that part of it up, I figured out it wasn't as accessible as it could be, and so now I'm in contact with them a little bit more about that. A lot of times what happens when I'm trying to get navigation, the watch will vibrate, but it'll send the directions to the phone, and I don't think that's very beneficial. So,
but you take it one step further. You contact a developer in hopes that they address the issues that you bring to their attention.
You know, I'm hopeful. They definitely are always looking for feedback, and user feedback is something that they they definitely always look for. And I've found that if I provide them with some very clear, actionable steps, this is how you reproduce an issue and this is how you fix an issue. A lot of times, depends on what they're able to do, but a lot of times it does get fixed within a reasonable amount of time.
Now, working with developers, that's nothing new for you because you've been working with Google on the Chromevox Next accessibility software for the Chromebooks.
Yep, that's right.
So when did you get on board with helping the developers of Chromevox Next?
I started over a year ago, and I was at a conference, and I met with a couple of accessibility individuals that work for Google. They asked me if this is something that I want to try out, is Chromevox Next, and I was a little bit excited about that, and I already had a Chromebook, so I went ahead and started playing around with Chromevox Next. And it is definitely an update, and it works really well. And it's at a point where I would say one of the best browsing experiences on the web right now.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I think it's great because a lot of educational systems and districts are providing, or do provide, some of them do, tablets or Chromebooks to the students. And when you're talking about a level playing field, having accessibility built in, so the Chromevox Next really steps up the game.
It definitely does. Most all the hotkeys have been redone, and so now it's a lot more delightful to use. It used to be you had to hit, for example, to jump to the next heading, you had to hit the Chromevox key, which is sort of like the voiceover key. It's two keys on the Chromebook, and then you had to hit N for next, and then you had to hit the Chromevox keys again and the letter H for heading.
Jeez.
Just to go to the next heading. And that was very cumbersome. It wasn't something that was very simple to use. It was usable. You could navigate the web with it, but you weren't going to get anywhere very quickly.
It's like a wild game of Twister.
Well, it was, yeah. And so now they've redone it so where the Chromevox key is just the search key on the Chromebook, which is similar to where the caps lock key would be on a regular keyboard. And now instead of having to hit N and the next letter, you just hit the Chromevox key and then the letter H for heading or whatever it is. So you hold down the Chromevox key and you hold down or you press H or B for button or any of those other controls. You can also lock the control or the search key down, so when you're browsing the web, it then becomes just a matter of pushing one button.
So, Nimer, in working with Google on the Chromevox Next accessibility, have you made Chromebook your go-to device?
It is. I use that as a primary mode of computing. Started using it even more at work. The only problem with it at work is we still connect to Windows Domain. And so there's a little bit of limitation there with trying to access a server, Windows server, efficiently. Can do it with Chrome, but it's not very efficient. Actually, I've been able to install Linux on Chrome or on top of Chrome. So I could do it anyway, but that gets a little bit more, geeky. But for the average person, if you're not doing that and you're using things, you want to write a document, you want to check your email, you want to listen to music, you want to watch your movies. I mean, these things are very, very doable on a Chromebook. I would say for the average computer user, even many advanced users would be able to get away with the Chromebook very, just fine.
Well, that's just great.
That's what I use at home, so.
Affordability is a huge factor when, you're thinking about people who are in a limited budget, transition age students, seniors, or anybody who is, on a tight budget. Having accessibility off the shelf is awesome.
Yep.
And as for, I have a Safari browser. When I go to a government website or, a tax form or something like that, it's not going to get me too far.
Yep, and then you can access a lot of those with Chrome. Sometimes they have some strange requirement. You go to a website that says you need to use Internet Explorer or something, but I would say 98% of the time, if not more, you're going to be okay using that. And they are affordable. I mean, I've seen, you can get Chromebooks for $199, $249, and these are, they have low specs, but you don't really need very much specs to run to have on a Chromebook. One of the Chromebooks I have here is running 16 gigs of hard drive space and 2 gigs of RAM. It still runs very snappy.
So, Nimer, considering transition age students who are transitioning from high school to college to the workplace and, with parents looking for something to get their kids, what would the specs be that they should look for in a Chromebook?
I think most Chromebooks that were released recently are going to meet the needs of most students. If you get a Chromebook that was released in this past year, it's going to run Android apps on top of Chrome as well. And so that adds even more functionality, because now not only do you have the Chrome store and all the stuff that Chrome can do, which is mostly web-based, but now on top of that, you also have Android apps and all the possibilities that that opens up. So any Android app is going to, you know, you're going to be able to download that and install it and run it. And that works really well too.
Well, it's just great that, you know, today more and more products are coming off the shelf with accessibility built in, and there's people like you that are helping developers make those products more accessible to all of us. So great job, Nimer. Now, today you guys are hosting a webinar for TransitionAid students, parents, and a panel of experts on blindness, and conducted by the Lighthouse Center for Vision Loss.
That's right. Last year, the Lighthouse started out its transition programming, and sort of as a result from some funding that became available federally, and the state was really pushing for this, and the Lighthouse said, we're going to do this. So we started out doing a little bit of a mixture of remote instruction with some on-site weekends about four times a year. And one of the feedback that we got last year was we needed to do a little bit better job at communicating. And we did say we're going to deliver parent programming, but it didn't happen as much as we would have liked it to. And so one of the feedback that we got this year, you know, when we collected that from parents, is they really wanted to know about what resources were available for their kids. We decided to do a webinar. This is now our second or third webinar that we're doing about different topics. But we decided to put together a webinar and invite parents and students. And what it's going to be is a panel of a couple of successful blind adults. And they're going to talk a little bit about sort of what resources they used in high school and what resources they found to be helpful in college and any tips and suggestions that they have. And then also in the workplace, you know, what did they find that their experience was and what tools, what things they recommend in the workplace. On the panel, we also have a State Services for the Blind counselor, Steve Larson, will be participating. And we also have a former coordinator of a office for disabled students at a university. And so the idea is to sort of tie in a lot of those resources together and to let parents and students know that, you know, these are the things that are available to them.
Well, that's really nice to hear, because that's a very important aspect that you're doing up there, is connecting people, you know, with the entities that are involved in trying to advocate or help people get information across. You know, parents want to be the best advocate they can be, and without the information or resources, you know, their hands are tied. So what you're doing is a great thing for the parents, the students, and bringing together all these as a hub up at the Lighthouse, especially in your area where people may have to travel 1 to 2 hours just to get to the center or have a counselor go out to them.
Well, I think it's really an added challenge in rural areas. A lot of times they're not receiving very much service from the school. They might have orientation and mobility maybe once a year, twice a year. You know, they're not getting a lot of these services, and so they may not know what resources are available. And then the parents, I would say, you know, even to a lesser extent, especially in those rural areas. So just the ability to connect them all together and have those conversations, and I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, being from the Twin City area in the metropolitan area here with transportation, everything, you know, we don't really consider that as much. But from your perspective and the amount of region that you have to cover, that's a whole nother aspect to providing services.
That's right. And we get we have a lot of rural students, and we also really get students from all around the state too. And you know, I think where we're providing a lot of this remote instruction, we're providing students with equipment to be able to complete that instruction for the year, giving them a laptop, assistive software, things like that. You have to be able to reach those people in those rural areas, and I think that they have their own challenges, and that's how we're doing that.
Well, that's great that you guys are innovative, and I think you guys are doing a great job.
Yep, thank you.
I just happened to pick up a Amazon Fire. They had a sale on it. I got it for $39. And right out of the box, it instructed me to put two fingers down and hold. And I had accessibility. My first Android device.
That's right. And Amazon runs a variant of Android. But Android is really great. And it's really bad. The reason it's really great is that there's so much fragmentation. And so you can get a device, and that device is going to be various price points, various level of quality, varying level even of accessibility, different features within the same operating system. Because it's so open, a manufacturer can really do whatever they want to with it, lock it down as much as they want or open it up as much as they want. Whereas, you know, Apple does not have that. Well, the downside of that is, as I said, you may not get great accessibility. One of the things that a lot of times might happen too is people pick up a device. If they don't do a little bit of research on it, they picked up a device that is running an Android version 3 years old, and it doesn't have the components to really run it very well. And then they're very disappointed in the experience that they get, but they bought a $20 device. And you can get really cheap devices, and sometimes they're good. Depends, you know, one of those things you have to really do that little bit of research on that. But sometimes they're good, and other times they're maybe not so good.
Yeah. Well, I thought for $39, I would at least get it, turn it on. And, you know, other than learning a few different gestures and stuff like that, I can put a mini SD card in there and I can load up either videos, audio, all sorts of stuff in there and not have to jeopardize the battery life of my phone or something.
You definitely can. And Amazon's, their cheap tablets are really pretty good. And you can also sort of unlock them and get the Play Store on there. And if you do that, then you really open it up to a whole lot more apps. They've done a really nice job. And they're running a variant of Android as well. So they've done a very nice job with their accessibility.
When you talk about unlocking, is that legal?
Oh, it definitely is legal. What happens is you get an Android device and it's as open as you want it to be. So by default, it's sort of locked down. It keeps you from doing things that, you know, you might not want to actually do. And with Amazon, of course, they try to keep you locked into using only their web store, but or their version of the Play Store. But unfortunately, their version of the Play Store doesn't have a lot of the apps. So a lot of the blindness-specific apps, money recognition, things like that, that are available on the Play Store, things like Bard. I don't think you're going to find a lot of that on the Amazon App Store. And so, you know, it's sort of one of those things that they try to say, okay, we're only going to give you the Amazon App Store, but it is Android. And so you can unlock it and get access to it. It is very legal. There's no really risk in doing that other than if you're doing it wrong, it is possible that you may break the device. But that's always the case anyway, I guess, if you do anything.
Oh, that's great. So, Nimer, I'm kind of curious, what kind of phone are you using?
I use a Google Pixel device, and so I'm sort of tied into this Google Sphere. I run Chrome, and I've had good success running Android. I've had, I've run a lot of Google apps, things like that. And so I'm sort of, not stuck, I choose to be, but I'm in with the Google sort of ecosystem. And I really find that I'm very close to the developers. And so, again, you know, I can submit feedback and I know that it's going to get actioned. I'm going to see results on that as long as it's something that they're able to do. If I start asking for the moon, then maybe not. But, I've really seen them take a lot of steps forward. And the Pixel is just a really nice device in general. It's just a really nice metal device, fast. Just a good little device. So
now, over the years, I've kind of built an Apple orchard around myself. And, you know, now that I got Alexa going, I see the calendar. So I downloaded the Google calendar to my phone because the Alexa will not take my calendar or my appointments into consideration.
Right.
So it's like I'm running into this mix that a lot of stuff that I'm starting to like and stuff is not Apple. It's on another platform. And so I'm starting to, I don't know, have more stuff than I really need, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing that Google does collaborate with more stuff in one realm than Apple does in another.
They definitely do, and a lot of the Google services are available on Apple. And a lot of this stuff, the Google Calendar and other Google apps are definitely available on Apple, and they're very accessible. I know the Gmail app on Apple, and these things are, you know, very accessible, and they work well, and, you know, as well as they work on Android. I have a Google Home, and I used to have Alexa, and Google Home came out. And again, I'm tied in enough with Google that I just said, well, we might as well get this Google Home. And, you know, it really ties in with a lot of the Google services pretty well. They still have a little bit of ways to go, but it just came out, so I'm sure that they'll get there.
But with Chrome, Google, Amazon, even Apple, it seems like things are really changing. I mean, we're a lot further ahead than we were 5 years ago.
We definitely are, and you know, I give a lot of credit to Apple. They really pioneered accessibility in many ways, jumped ahead, and created something that really didn't exist. If somebody had told me that, when the iPhone came out, that this slab of glass is going to be accessible, I would have told them, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, Apple really has done a very nice job and sort of forced the rest of, you know, everyone else to follow along. And of course, now they're doing that and they're innovating and they're coming out with new things and in some instances better things. But Apple really jumped ahead and they did that. So I give them a lot of credit for that. But the industry's come a long way.
Oh, yeah. Especially even with Comcast and even DirecTV now and all the... It seems like a lot of things are falling into place. You know, it helps that a law was passed. But, you know, it's just... It's a good time to be blind in a sense.
It's really great. You know, you can go pick up a lot of products right off the shelf and use them. And I think what really helps is now a lot of devices are connected. And so even if that new dryer or whatever it is not accessible because it's all flat touchscreen, well, it probably has a smartphone app. And, you know, a lot of times that will be accessible. And if not, then it's not too difficult to make accessible. And so it's one of those things that a lot of the stuff being connected really helps us out.
Yeah. People used to always say, I wonder where we'd be in 10 years. And I'm starting to ask, where are we going to be in 6 months, the way things are moving?
Oh, definitely. There's always new things. And even last year, a lot of the cable services weren't even accessible. And now you go on Dish or you go on you know, a lot of these Comcast and even Charter now. I think now they're getting tablets. Here's what they're doing for accessibility. But they're getting Android tablets running their own Charter app.
Oh, really? But, they send you a whole tablet?
Yep, they'll send you a tablet and they'll give you a little bit of training on it, and it has their Charter app installed, and they say, here you go, this is our version of accessibility.
You know, when Comcast came out with their app, the accessibility, you know, after a couple of trials and stuff like that, is splendid. I mean, I'm talking about on my iPhone right now, and it was great, and I'm thinking, you know what, and here came DirecTV, there's not going to be these big dishes anymore. You know, or really, is there a need for a cable anymore?
Yep. And so the only reason I pay for cable is I get a bundled rate, and it's cheaper for me to buy cable and internet, just the way it worked out, than it would be to buy internet. I'm not sure why, but it's how it happened. Most of my video, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV, but when I do, I'll pull up Hulu or I'll pull up a Netflix, you know, any content that I want to watch is right there, and it's very, very affordable, and I can watch it on my phone, on my computer. I can start it on my computer and finish it on my phone, whatever I want to do. It's a whole lot more flexible.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, some people say, yeah, cut the cord and you're going to save money. But the way I see it is, okay, you're going to pay 10 bucks for Netflix. Then you're going to pay 10 bucks for this, 5 bucks. It's like a smorgasbord. But, you know, if you want everything cable offers you, yeah, I don't know if you're going to be saving money in this nickel and diming it adds up.
It does definitely add up. So, you know, it's a pros and cons things. I don't watch enough TV to make, if I was paying for a cable subscription and that's all I was paying for, you know, it wouldn't be worth it for me. I'd probably pay for Netflix and be done with it. But, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if that, I don't know that I watch enough to make it even that worth it. So,
well, Nimer, I want to thank you for coming on the Blind Abilities. I'm glad what you're doing with Google, you know, giving them feedback, making a better product for everybody, and what you're doing with the transition age students and the parents up there at the Duluth Lighthouse.
Well, and I want to thank you. And I think, you know, this is a really valuable resource. Definitely try to get the word out to students, and they always get the link to it. And, you know, I found a lot of the podcasts, and, you know, I've had students, even one of the things I do is teach the adjustment classes, and I've had students listen to a lot of the success stories that come out of blind abilities, and a lot of the college students and high school students. And, you know, I find that very valuable too. So thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. We've been talking to Niver Jabber. He's a case manager and technology instructor at the Lighthouse Center for the Visually Impaired, located in Duluth, Minnesota. And thank you so much for coming on the Blind Abilities.
Thank you.
That was Niver Jabber, technology instructor, case manager, up there in Duluth at the Lighthouse. And you know what? One thing I really like about Niver, there's many things, but one important thing is he's an early adopter of technology. He's the guy that'll take that thing right off the shelf, call up the developers, work with them, get that thing working great with accessibility. I know some people like to wait till the second version comes out, so everything's ironed out. Niver, he goes in, gets the work done, which helps everybody with accessibility. So thank you, Niver. Well, thank you all for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes, we can then begin to bridge the gap
between the limited expectations and the realities
of blind abilities.
The realities of blind abilities.
Of blind abilities.
For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter at Blind Abilities, download our app from the App Store, Blind Abilities, that's two words, or send us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks for listening.